Hey, shake and bake, Cal. Woo!
Shake and bake!
Live from the place where it's a holiday weekend every Friday, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. On today's epic pre-Labor Day party from Be Wealthy and Smart, help us welcome special guest Linda P. Jones. From Afford Anything, Paula Pant. And, did you miss him? From Control Your Cash, Greg McFarlane. Also, in our FinTech segment, from the 401k management app Bloom, CEO Chris Costello. And here he is, the guy helping you kick off the holiday weekend, Joe Saul Sehy.
Say hello to my little friend, the Friday edition of the show. Hey, everybody, I'm Joe Saul Sehy, Average Joe Money on Twitter. And what a great, great Labor Day weekend we're kicking off here. Linda P. Jones back on the show. And you know how many people have asked us about Bloom? A lot. So really excited to talk Bloom in the middle of the show. Super excited to have Linda P. Jones back on the show. But first, I'm excited that so many people use Magnify Money, not just because they're our sponsor, but because of the fact that I get notes like this one from Tony. Tony said, hey, just wanted to let you know, I just changed my savings account to one you just talked about on last week's Friday show. 1.1% versus me getting pretty much nothing thanks to you and to Magnify Money. I'm going to actually make a little money on my savings this year. How great's that? I love notes like that. So if you want to send me a note too, head to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money. And according to those guys, the average person who uses their service saves about $450. And we'll throw in another $100 if you go to one of Magnify Money's favorite places. That's SoFi, spelled S-O-F-I. Use stackingbenjamins.com/SoFi. They'll throw in $100 if you use them to refinance your student loan. You know that student loan that's at way too high an interest rate? Or a personal loan. If you're taking out a personal loan, getting those credit cards put together into a single loan and then paying them off, how great is that? Get the interest rate lower, cut up the cards, and you're well on your way. stackybenjamins.com/SoFi. And that $100 you can use to put toward the loan. All right. Exciting show today. Linda P. Jones hanging out with Paula and Greg on the roundtable. Bloom at the halfway point during our FinTech segment. So let's do this, huh? Let's kick off Labor Day weekend in the United States with a bang. Here we go. Everybody, let's walk across the room to my dad's shortwave, crank this thing up and see if we can get the greatest minds in financial writing. And today it's two-thirds podcasting. But why don't we start with the guy that we haven't heard from in a long time. I thought he died. I didn't know what happened. Greg McFarlane, welcome back.
I did not die. I was merely in Liechtenstein, which is the smallest country I've ever visited.
Yeah. And that's what they don't have internet there or anything. You can't tell us that you're gone.
They have internet. I just didn't feel like lugging my gigantic Yeti microphone with me.
I would have loved to have had Greg McFarlane live from Liechtenstein. That would have been cool. That would have been great. But we got
plus we would have been recording at about 12:30 in the morning.
That's true. Good point. And somebody else who is in the desert, maybe just a few miles away from Greg McFarlane, I think it's Paula Pant from Afford Anything.
It is me, and I am in the desert.
Excellent. I think I'm the only one who's not in the desert, by the way, this week. So what's going on, Paula, besides dealing with the heat?
You know, I've gotten used to the heat. I'm actually going to miss it when it's gone. Mark my words, I'm going on record of saying that. You can really adapt to 100 degree plus days when you put your mind to it.
What's that joke? It's the humidity that kills you.
Oh, it is. And we don't have that here in the desert, thank goodness. So I'm glad to be here.
So somebody else in the desert, glad she's joining us again. I think she might have been on, I don't know, Linda P. Jones for Be Wealthy and Smart. Have you been on more? Well, you would know this. I'm about to ask you if you've been on more than any other guest. You're like, how the hell would I know?
I think I have because I think you told me that before. I think this is around the fifth or sixth time, maybe more. I'm not sure.
Well, welcome back.
But it's thank you. It's delightful to be back. And I just want to say, Greg, since you're the grand poopah of trivia, have you ever been to the Vatican?
No, because Liechtenstein is the smallest country I've ever visited. Come on,
pay attention. There you go. Okay. All right. I thought I had you.
Very close.
And I haven't been to Nauru. I haven't been to Monaco either. Okay. I haven't been to Andorra. I haven't been to Malta.
Just as an aside, we skipped Monaco when we were nearby in Nice, and it was because most people told us there really wasn't anything to see there. Linda, have you been to Monaco?
I have a couple times on cruises.
Liked it?
And you can certainly see the casino there. That's very famous. There's the Hotel de Paris, which is beautiful and worth seeing. There's, you know, lovely restaurants with views of the water. I mean, I think for any seaside town, it's beautiful. You can, of course, you can go to the palace, too.
We did decide between that or Saint-Tropez, so we went the other way to Saint-Tropez.
Okay. Well.
maybe not. Paul, have you been there?
So Saint-Tropez, I have not. I tend to go to cheaper places.
Oh, I felt so out of place. It was, it was beautiful. But hey, people, this is not Joe's travel podcast. So why don't we move over and talk about things that people are looking for, which is money columns. Although we're going to start off here with a piece from Kiplinger. This is written by, and we did a piece from him last week, Mikey Rocks. Paul, I still don't think that's his real name, Mikey Rocks.
That's a great name, though. I mean, if it is a pseudonym, more power to him for thinking of something so clever.
Yeah, if I can't have a name like Paula Pant, I'm going with Mikey Rocks. That's what I'm doing. 9 ways, with the Olympics having just ended just about a week ago, 9 ways to think like an Olympian to master your money. So I thought this was good. Paula, number one here, commit to a goal or goals. You think, I feel like we're so close to this, right? That is always, we hear that over and over and over. Do you think there's still people out there that don't know that committing to a goal is really important?
I think everybody knows that committing to a goal is important, but I think the way in which you structure that goal and the way that you frame that, the day-to-day of it can vary. Like some people, for example, their goal is based on the result, but they don't have any plan related to effort. You know, so every Olympian wants to win the gold, but they also have specific plans, like I'm going to wake up at 5 a.m. every day to swim the butterfly stroke or whatever it is that they do. That is where goals need to focus. And I think that's where a lot of people fall short.
So it's more like a wish.
Exactly. A lot of people have fantasies that they think are goals because they haven't developed an action plan that is specific and measurable.
Linda, with a site like Be Wealthy and Smart, you have to have people that come to you going, oh, I just click my heels together 3 times and I'll be wealthier and I'll be smarter.
Well, I do have those people, but they learn quickly that that doesn't work. You know, it's funny. I have not been a big fan of budgets, and I can appreciate his article. I liked his article, actually. However, I think that budgets can be really restrictive feeling, and a lot of people just want to go off them as soon as they're on them. And so I like people to set priorities for their spending, and faith, family, and wealth building, I think, are good priorities. And so if it falls in one of those 3 categories, it's a must do, you know, if you want to spend money there. And if it doesn't fall in one of those 3 categories, then it's time to, you know, really pay attention to what are you doing and does it really fit with your goals? Because if your goal is to become a millionaire, you have to do specific things with your money in order to get there. It's not just going to happen.
I like this idea, Greg, just talk about what Linda's talking about, this idea of striving for consistency. So when you fall off the horse, you get right back on.
Well, congratulations to Mikey Rocks of the Kiplinger Rockses for shoehorning in a smoking hot current events take. I have to be the pessimist here. I'm going to be the green residue in the diving pool.
Welcome back.
I'm going to be the brothel receipt in Ryan Lochte's pocket. Set goals. That's personal development 101. However, make sure that those are indeed goals and they are not excuses for you to share the details of your life with other people. 90% of personal finance blogs and people on Facebook are nothing more than overextended idiots making public the details of their bad decisions. My hubby and I are going to pay off $120,000 in student loans by December 2018. Come track our progress with us. Great. Good for you. Now, is that a goal or is that a declaration? As a rule, it seems to me that the people who accomplish the most are the ones who promise the least, or at the very least, the ones who promise the least to anyone but themselves.
But don't you think that putting it out there, like number 2 on Mikey's list here, and I still can't get over that name. Mikey likes it. He really does. You guys remember that commercial?
Yes.
Number 2 here, put those goals in places of visibility, Greg. And I think to some degree, when somebody makes a declaration on Facebook or to a group of friends and says, hey, this is what I'm going to do. Like now there's some gravitas behind it. Now it's no longer a wish. Now I'm going to look stupid if I don't do it.
That Life cereal reference is way over Paula's head, or over over her birth certificate at any rate.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about once again.
But don't you think that for some of those bloggers, that's the case? Like they're putting it out there more for them than they are for you.
Yeah. Well, do we see results? We track them and sometimes it's left wanting. I mean, when I bought my first house or my second or my third, I didn't go around telling people about it, primarily because they have their own problems. And I'd have to be pretty arrogant to think that mine are of interest to anybody but me. I think you... Let's add an 11th one here. Let's spend less time broadcasting our goals and more time actually working on them.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that. Let's call Mikey and have him add that to it. I don't want to keep making fun of his name because I do like his article. Paula, on number three here, recognizing the necessary sacrifices. When I read this, people are sacrificing, according to him, monetary decisions about buying things. I think the necessary sacrifice is on the other side, don't you? Which is sacrificing and maybe earning more income.
That's true. I mean, you could do both. Like, ultimately, you want to grow the gap between what you earn and what you spend. And there are two ways to do that. You can either increase your income, decrease your spending, or both. Ultimately, what matters is the size of the gap in between. Now, I will say that earning more offers no ceiling on that potential. But that being said, spending less is the easy win. And so particularly for people who already have a big spending problem, sure, you can have that done by Friday. The other thing, though, is in terms of necessary sacrifices, I doubt that any Olympian feels that they have, quote unquote, sacrificed, you know, nacho cheese for breakfast in order to meet their athletic goals. It doesn't feel like a sacrifice. It feels like it's a lifestyle. It's what you want to do. It's just
Just
how you choose to live. Yeah.
Yeah. But at that level, I think there's got to be some days when you wake up and you're like, I do not want to do this again.
I should have gone into ice hockey.
Yeah.
here's the thing, though. If you're paying yourself first in the proper order, which is first, then it won't feel like a sacrifice because it's an automatic bill that you're paying.
Yeah.
I mean, I think part of this, you know, we sort of have to divide the people who are in debt that are paying off debt, because I understand that you have to look at every single dollar you're spending and have to be very careful with your money. And then people that aren't in that situation have the luxury of doing some other things, but, you know, paying themselves first and investing that money first and maxing out their 401k and things like that, that are just going to naturally come out of their paycheck, that normally doesn't really feel like a huge sacrifice, I don't think. So I agree with Paula.
Greg, number seven on this list is cultivate self-discipline. And I feel like that's what your book, Control Your Cash, available on Amazon and everywhere. How about that? That's kind of the theme of your entire book.
$6.95. Yeah. I don't know anybody who has their financial head on straight who is not disciplined. I mean, yeah, I'm not saying that you have to put every penny in your 401k and never have a single indulgence. But you have to know where those indulgences should lie and when they're getting ahead of you. When you can't make your monthly credit card payments, that's a pretty good signal.
Yeah, good place to start and good place for us to leave that one right there, because we have a way more important article from Newsmax here. How one 62-year-old man grew his $1,500 savings into $2.7 million. Linda P. Jones, this is amazing. About 3 years ago, Robert Allen decided to take matters into his own hands and invest his life savings of $1,500 on his own. Today, his portfolio is worth more than $2.7 million. How did he do it? He created this program. And if you give him some money, Linda, you too can grow your $1,500 into $2.7 million. Sounds super easy.
I loved how something with 100% compounding rate was called the conservative investor. I mean, it's just... This has all the marks of the biggest scam. And unfortunately, it's not the first time I've seen something like this. I've seen so many, as we all have. But I think the thing that really shocks me is if you think about this for just even half a minute, you'd know that 100% compounding would mean this person would be the richest person in the world in a very short period of time if this actually worked. It's just like the grain of rice example that he gave where, you know, one grain became two and two became four and four became eight and all of that until he had more money than the king. Well, it's the same thing. If you can compound at 100%, you can basically start with $10,000 and be a millionaire in 7 years if you were doing it annually. If you're doing that in 7 days, you'd be a millionaire in 7 days, which is insane. I mean, that just doesn't happen, or he would be the richest man, you know, in the world. And so I think we have to look at that and say, if this were really true, this man would literally be the richest man on earth. And it bothers me because I've seen like contraptions that they sell for your mind that they tell you you're going to, you know, create all this money if you just put this thing and listen to these voices or subliminal things or whatever. It's the same thing. If that really worked, those people would be the richest people on the planet. So, you know, it's just such a scam.
Linda Paul is wearing one of those devices right now.
You know, people bought them. I mean, I was in the audience and this person made this presentation and people literally ran to the back of the room to buy them. And it really disturbed me because obviously I knew what was going to happen. It wasn't going to work.
It's amazing. So. Paula, what was the first clue for you this was a scam?
Well, you know, so when I first saw this headline, I thought that this was going to be a story about long-term compounding interest.
I did too.
Me too. I did too. Yeah. The story about like the secretary who bought stocks over 35 years. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so as I was reading it, my very first clue was when it said about 3 years ago, he invested $1,500. And in 3 years, it turned into $2.7 million. At that point, that's when the sirens started flashing.
But you know, Greg, that there's people that go, oh, that sounds great. My wife and I, we got to get into this.
Well, then I hope Robert Allen takes all their money. First of all, did you read this? How did he make it to 59 with life savings of just $1,500?
I know.
That's more amazing than amassing the $2.7 million.
He went from the dumbest guy alive to the most brilliant.
Also, I happen to read the second paragraph as well. He's 62 years old and his grandmother is 88. Something literally doesn't add up. Even Loretta Lynn wasn't cranking out grandchildren at 26.
You've never heard that kid song, I'm My Own Grandpa?
I've heard the mental exercise about the guy who goes back in time and right. kills his grandfather. But yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of killing Hitler.
But I do want to share how someone would know that this is absolutely a scam.
Yeah, go.
Want to hear? Okay. Because Warren Buffett's long-term track record is roughly a 20% compounding rate. That's how you know. So if your rate is much higher than that, then that is really not a realistic rate because literally he became the richest man in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. So compare it to 20%. If somebody says they do better than that, probably not.
Yeah. So 20% consistently will get you a long way.
Yeah. Paula, biggest scam you've heard?
Probably this thing. I mean, I try to shelter myself from the world of scams. If something sounds too good to be true, I ignore it. So it doesn't really lodge into my long-term memory.
Well, sorry to make it so you couldn't ignore this one. I made you talk about it. It's so great to have Greg back. Hey, got to say thanks to everybody who's gone back to stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money. I say go back because of the fact that if you've been there before, you're going to find out that things change fairly often. So Nick from Magnify Money says about once a year is a good time to go back and check and make sure that you still are in the top rated stuff. What are you waiting for? All that's going to happen is you're going to save more money. StackingBenjamins.com/magnify money. That link gets you there. And one of the top places on Magnify Money is SoFi. So whether you're refinancing the student loan or you're looking at your personal loans, doing all that stuff, go to Magnify Money first, and then if you want to add $100 to the link, if you decide to use SoFi, stackingbenjamins.com/SoFi gets you there as well. You can also go directly through Magnify Money. You won't get the $100, but go through Magnify Money and keeps my other sponsor happy, which is fantastic. All right. I love being surrounded by good companies like those two companies. It makes me very happy. And we have some news on new sponsors coming up soon, by the way. We'll have more on that later. But right now, I'm super excited to have Chris Costello, the CEO of Bloom, coming down to the basement. Let's find out what it's all about. And Chris Costello from Bloom joins us in the basement. Welcome, man.
Hey, glad to be here. And you've done really like what you've done with the place.
Well, you're a big fan of Bon Jovi then.
Oh, yes, yes. Authentic posters all over the place.
I got to ask you, Bloom is in Overland Park. That means you're near Kansas City, I think.
Yep.
Which means that you must be a Royals fan.
Oh, man, there's been so much, such a source of pride for this town. I've read something recently where they were talking about Kansas City Royals fans might be some of the best in the country. And, you know, we went 30 years in between championships, and it's like there is a lift in this city that I have to attribute some of that to us winning the World Series that is, you can feel it, and definitely a fun place to be the last few years.
Well, I find it annoying because I'm a Detroit Tiger fan, and so I try really hard to hate you guys. And it's frustrating because I go to your city for the first time a couple of years ago, and it's gorgeous. And it's a great, there's walking trails all over the place and lots of stuff to do. And then I go to Kauffman Stadium and it's beautiful and people are nice and it's so annoying.
So literally the hairs on the back of my neck literally just stood up when you said that, because that I've actually lived in this area my entire life. I'm 43 years old. I've never left. And, you know, there's always a sense of the grass is greener elsewhere. You know, I think everybody has that. But it makes me feel so good to hear you say that, because I hear other people say that all the time. The single thing that makes me the most proud about Kansas City is when people come here for the first time and they talk about how genuinely nice people are. If that is like the hook that people remember Kansas City for, I think that'd be perfect. And we, like our president, Greg Smith, who was a Wall Street guy, you know, came from South Africa to Stanford to New York and lived in New York, worked at Goldman Sachs for 10, 15 years, and then literally picked up stakes his entire – all of his social connections that he'd made in New York over 15 years. And he just moved to Kansas City in February this year, obviously to be closer to Bloom. And he has talked about like how unbelievably nice people are. he's just so impressed. And I love hearing that.
I don't know who's nicer. You guys are Canadians. But what people want to know isn't about Kansas City, though. They want to know about Bloom, spelled with three O's, by the way. And maybe I have to ask you about that. But what was the problem you guys were trying to solve, Chris? Was it a personal thing for you? Or did you see something out there in society, in the community? What?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So before Bloom, I started in the industry in 1995. Right out of college, originally as kind of what they used to call stockbrokers, but we evolved into wealth advisors, money managers. And so for almost two decades, I was managing money for the most part for high net worth individuals. That definition changes for us. You generally had to have at least $1 million in your portfolio to get in our front door. Myself and one of the other founders of Bloom started a firm about 13 years ago, an independent fee-only firm, again, catering towards people with large accounts and mainly folks that were preparing, you know, getting close to retirement. And I had this thought that, like, the people we were helping arguably needed our services the least. I'm a certified financial planner. I think I'm pretty good at managing money and helping people, you know, plan out for their financial futures. And I'm like, you know, these people have kind of already won the race. You know, they've got plenty of money. They largely live here in the Midwest where the cost of living is low. You know, we can model scenarios out till the cows come home, and it's like they're not going to run out of money. Meanwhile, they're like, there's tens of millions of people in this country that might not ever get to that point, but they still want to have a dignified retirement. They still want to have an opportunity to stop working at some point and do whatever it is they want to do, see the grandkids, travel, start another business, you know, volunteer 100% of their time, whatever the case may be. And it's like we knew firsthand that if you didn't have a lot of money, the tools that were out there were failing. We have a saying at Bloom that you cannot educate people into submission when it comes to, you know, making great decisions with their money. At the end of the day, there are still tens of millions of people that flat out needs somebody to do it for them. It's the same damn thing as we don't operate and perform open heart surgeries on ourselves. We go to professionals and doctors to have that. But in the financial services sector, it's almost like we've said, you know what? You don't qualify to have somebody actually do it for you. So you here's the manual and go figure it out yourself. Can you imagine if your doctor said that to you? Or if you needed an open heart surgery and your doctor said, you know, you don't qualify you don't have a big enough net worth for me to do your surgery, but I'm going to give you this manual, the College Board manual, and this really, really good scalpel, you know, and if you spend some time studying it, you can figure this out. And this sounds ludicrous, but that's what's happening in financial services today. So we thought the whole model was broken, and we knew that technology has the ability to deliver services to a group of people who have never been helped in this regard before. And that's probably like what gets me the most fired up, is I love it when technology can bring services or solutions to a brand new audience that's never had that help before. And so that's why we started Bloom.
It's funny. We had Professor William Birdthistle on last Wednesday, who has a new book called Empire of the Fund. And he talked about how people need a license to drive a car, but we don't need any type of training. We're not given any type of training to manage our own investments. And yet people that aren't CFPs are out there, you know, they're educated, they're smart, they know how it works. I'm talking about Wall Street. And, you know, people are losing money hand over fist to people that are far more investment savvy than they are.
Well, let me share a story with you that'll talk about that precisely. So my sister, Annie, she is 4 years younger than me. And about 3 years ago, when we were in the early stages of building out the code and the technology that became Bloom, we needed some test 401k accounts to test out the algorithm and the technology. So I called my sister up like 3 years ago and I said, Annie, can I get your login credentials to your 401k? And she said, you know, I'm her big brother, so she trusted me. So I got her login credentials. I log into her 401k and I am absolutely appalled to see that my sister has 100% of her retirement nest egg in the damn money market.
Earning nothing.
Yes. So I'm like, oh, I pick up the phone. I call her back. I said, Annie, did you like panic out of the market or something and, you know, and go to cash or whatever the case is? And my worst fears came true. She says, no. She said, Chris, when I signed up for this 401k like 5 or 6 years ago, I remember like getting the information or going online and like the choices didn't make any sense to me. I didn't understand what it meant. So she's like, I just figured one of these days I'd call you up and ask you for help. And so life gets in the way. She's got two young boys, my nephews that she's chasing around the house at night, and life gets in the way. And what was on her to-do list turned out to be 5 or 6 years.
Right.
And so unfortunately, if you're doing the math here, this was about 3 years ago, which means she signed up for her 401k sometime in about 2009 and had no investment from 2009 to 2013. What would the market do from 2009 to 2013?
Right. Basically
double.
Right.
Okay. And so now let me make a point about this story though. My sister is incredibly smart. She was valedictorian of a gigantic high school class. She's way smarter than I am. And one of the other things that we've come to realize is effing up or screwing up your 401k doesn't discriminate. It doesn't matter where you came from, how you were raised, what college you went to, whether you went to college, what job you're in, what your GPA was, nothing. People from all walks of life are not wired to be astute investors with their 401ks. And if we were talking about, like in Bloom's case, all we manage is 401ks for people through technology and automation. If we were talking about somebody's like fun trading account, that's a whole different story. Go ahead and screw that up. It's not, but these are people's retirements that are riding on the person, the individual being a savvy investor. And don't get me wrong, there is a segment of this population that is good at picking investments for themselves. They actually enjoy it. Okay. But that's the vast minority of the 90 million people that have a 401k today. Most people are like, I've got no clue. And whether or not they realize it, they're most likely not going to get a pension. They're not going to get that check in their mailbox when they retire. And so these 401ks or 403bs, that is going to be the difference between whether or not they can retire at 55 or 60 or 65 or ever. And our belief is people need a service that can do it for them. We can't shove more information. We can't shove more do-it-yourself manuals at these people, at most of these people. They need something to do it for them.
Well, let's go through a quick walkthrough of how the product works then, Chris. So if I have a 401k plan, I go to bloom.com, and then what happens?
Yeah. So everybody, like everybody should try this, because if you go to bloom.com and there is three O's in that, that's for another story. Bloom spelled with three O's.com, and then click on the green get started button. So if people will give us 4 minutes, okay, we will analyze start to finish the health of their 401k. And we use the image of a flower to convey that health. So no complex pie charts or line graphs or Wall Street jargon BS. This is plain human speak. We're looking for three things. Number one, we run a test on the fees. The second thing is we're looking for an appropriate mix, a risk profile in the account. So are you 30 years old with 30 years to retirement, or are you 59 with 1 year to retirement? So we're assessing kind of the stock to bond mix there to see if it's appropriate for your age and your time frame to retirement. The third thing we're testing for, diversification. We show people thumbs up or thumbs down on each of those. We show them what their allocation should look like. They can see it right in front of them, given their time frame to retirement. So all that's free. They can actually see all of that information for no cost. And at the very end, they're given an option. Do you want Bloom to start managing this for you? So the same thing that I used to do for millionaire clients is now embedded in the technology. And then they get at the end, they can use a credit or debit card to sign up. Very simple, the pricing. If you've got under 20 grand, if you're just starting off in your 401k, we charge basically the price of an expensive latte per month. It's $5 per month if you've got under 20 grand in your 401k. Once you've graduated above that, or we've helped our clients get more than $20,000, the fee goes to $19 a month. So like 2x what Netflix is right now a month. It is a pay-as-you-go. You can cancel at any time. There are no other fees whatsoever. And basically, we take over and handle the 401k for our clients. We're real good about, you know, sending, you know, sense of humor is very important to us. It sounds trivial, but at the end of the day, we don't take ourselves too serious. And so with the way in which we communicate with people, we try to use a little bit of irreverence to help people, even if, so they've signed up and we're managing their 401k, but we also want to like make them just smarter. The same thing you're doing with what your podcasts are out there.
Oh, people will debate that, man.
Well, I'm sure for us too. But that, we want to like help our clients be smarter with their money. So to boil it down, I felt like as a CFP for clients that were worth $5 million, I was giving these people so much freaking value. Our goal at Bloom at some point is to give clients with whatever account balance that kind of value in return from us.
A couple technical questions. Let's say that I've got a 403B, I'm a teacher or work in a place where I don't have a 401k, I have a 403B, or I have a 457, or maybe I'm Canadian. We talked about how nice Canadians are, and I've got one of the awesome Canadian plans. Can you guys handle those?
Everything in the U.S. So, okay. Let me clarify. Everything that's employer sponsored in the U.S. Okay. So that's a 401k, a 403b, a 457, or a TSP if you're a government employee.
Got it. And then security. How does that work?
Security in what we're doing is obviously paramount. In fact, we've even done a variety of different surveys trying to understand our clients even more. And the number one thing they talked about that was like the most emotive, like quick response, yes, this is massively important to me, is security. And so we go through, I've been coached by my CTO that I cannot share all of the ways in which we secure our clients' data because I never thought about this, but you actually then become like a target
right.
for people, other people sitting in their basements. You're doing good in your basement. Other people sitting in their basements.
Well, nobody wants any of this, even though you keep looking at it.
There are other basement dwellers that are up to more nefarious acts. But obviously we take this extremely serious in how we encrypt passwords and make it, very, very hard, obviously, for folks to mess things up. But at the end of the day, like, keep this in mind. If somebody would actually like crack into our clients, if any of our clients, even if they weren't a Bloom client, if any of our clients' 401k accounts were like hacked into from an outside person, like the most nefarious thing that person could do is make transactions in their account. Moving money outside of a 401k almost takes an act of a higher power or a blood sample or, you know, something a lot more than that. So one of the things I want to make clear, clients don't move their money to be a client of Bloom's. Every single one of Bloom's clients, their 401k is where their 401k is at.
Right. It's not like having a Merrill Lynch broker where they're going to move it all over to Merrill Lynch. It's going to stay right at your company. If you're a General Motors employee, you're working with the GM 401k.
Bingo. Has to stay there.
And one last question for the Uber geeks out there. You do it using modern portfolio theory?
That's exactly right. Yeah. It's, a lot of people want to go quickly to, are you going to, you know, am I going to make a lot more money signing up for Bloom? And I want to be crystal clear. I would never, ever say that that's anything that we would promise to our folks. Now, I would tell you this, that if you're kind of like my sister, Annie,
the answer is yes.
I think we can make some improvements there. You know, here's the thing: why we never want to like focus too much on performance. Because think of this scenario: what if my sister, who had been 5 years in a money market, okay, what if Bloom takes over her 401k, which we did 3 years ago? What if the market would have crashed like the next day?
Right.
You know, so it's like you cannot use that even as a judgment. The judgment is, or what we think we're doing is, we are bringing a strategy. I'm not saying the best strategy. We're bringing a strategy to tens of millions of people, we hope,
that have no strategy. We've literally seen some people in their 401ks, if there's 20 options, we've seen some people literally put 5% in all 20 options.
It's a safer strategy that's not based on guesswork or what your buddy's doing in the next cubicle.
That's right.
It's, yes, it's based on some science.
It's based on a lot of historical science. Yeah. There's no, I talk about it being very meat and potatoes. There's nothing flashy. We're not trading the accounts. It is core asset allocation.
I'll have a link to Bloom in our show notes, everybody, if you're out on the morning walk or driving down the road, at our show notes at stackybenjamins.com. Chris, thanks for coming on. I was so happy for you guys last year, but I'm even happier this year that the Detroit Tigers are ahead of you in the standings.
I know. We've kind of falled off. We kind of worked our way back in the standings a little bit, unfortunately.
Thanks for hanging out.
Thank you very much.
Big thanks to Chris Costello coming down to the basement. And this, by the way, was another fintech product that we had on the show. You know why? Because we had so many notes about it. So if you've got a fintech thing that you are interested in hearing more about, once again, we don't endorse any of these companies. We just like talking about them so that you can see all the different cool things going on in the financial technology arena. And Bloom certainly qualifies there, doesn't it? I've seen so many 401ks mismanaged over the years. I think, man, if you paid just a little attention, maybe you don't even have to pay attention just to have a company like Bloom. All right, that's that. And I'll have links on the show notes, by the way, to Bloom at stackybenjamins.com if you just head there, if you're walking the dog or whatever today. All right, here we go. Let's get back to our discussion with Linda P. Jones for Be Wealthy and Smart, Greg McFarland with Control Your Cash and Investopedia, and also Paula Pant from Afford Anything. Let's move on to our third article. We're going to have some fun with this one. This is the Moneyologist on MarketWatch. And I like asking our panel the same questions that they ask Quentin Fottrell here. This is the question. Dear Moneyologist, been married to my wife for 3 years. She's from Montreal and moved to California to be with me. I never asked her about her finances and would assume she'd have some savings since she worked as long as I did. I thought we'd grow our income and savings together, but instead I'm stressed over money as she doesn't help me with any expenses. I bought a house before I even met her. She lived in that house with me and does not help me with the mortgage or property tax. I pay for everything. She only pays her own expenses, and there are occasions when she cannot pay her own expenses and asks me for help. I willingly help. I ask her about the $10,000 I've given her over the past 3 months for her expenses, and she doesn't even know what she spent it on. Lately, she's been talking to me about wanting her name on the titles of the cars in my house, which I paid for. I feel I'm being taken advantage of, and I'm not sure how to tell her in a nice way. She's not contributing financially to our marriage. Since I married her, my savings have shrunk as I have to pull out emergency money to help her and don't get an honest answer from her about her spending. I just don't know how to say it in a constructive way so she can see it's unfair for me to work so hard to save and pay for everything while she doesn't help. Michael in California. So let's start, Paula, with you. What would you say to Michael in California about him and his spendthrift spouse?
Ouch. This sounds like this is a serious marriage problem. And I don't think that this is just a financial problem. I think that they need counseling. They need to bring in professionals because there are some trust and honesty issues that are happening here.
It also seemed, Linda, like he assumed a lot when he says, well, I assumed since we're about the same age, she had some savings. I don't think I would have gone into the relationship assuming all that.
You know, this was really scary. I actually know of a real life case that's similar to this, unfortunately.
Maybe it's this person.
No, it's not. It's reversed. The person married this person without realizing, well, without the other party disclosing that there were two bankruptcies in their life before they got married. So I would tell him, go and do a little background check. Go to Intellius.com and do a little background check and find out a little bit more about her, because there may be some interesting place where that money, that $10,000 he gave her, is going. I would also say that...
How exactly would that site tell you, by the way? Tell us what that does.
Well, it can tell you if they own property, if they've had legal matters, if they've been in trouble with the law, if she has a drug problem, you know, and been arrested. It can tell you things like that.
It also sounds like that's something people should do if they own rental properties.
You know, not a bad part of a background check. Sure.
You know, Paula, do you use something like that when you have renters?
So when we process tenant applications, the website that we use does a credit check and a criminal background check.
Okay. Linda, I'm sorry not to cut you off to go to Paula there. I just wanted to clarify that, because that's a great sounding site.
Yeah, it's been helpful to some people in the past. We'll just say that.
Right.
And I would say don't add her to the title, because then she can encumber your assets, and that could be a problem, a worse problem than even just giving her half of the property. And a nice way to say it might be, honey, you're welcome to buy half of the assets if you earn enough money to invest. Until then, they remain my separate property.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, nice but forceful. Greg, nice but forceful.
Joe, per your request, I resisted the temptation to look at moneyologist response here. My first interpretation of this was that this wife has got to be smoking hot. And she must do things in the bedroom that Alexis Texas couldn't dream of. Now, not knowing your spouse's finances or not acknowledging the details of them could happen. I mean, my ex-wife thought I wanted kids. Now, I got to start with a qualifier that I think this letter is every bit as fake as the letters that Trent Siegfried runs at the Simple Dollar.
Do you?
But I need to assume it's true for the sake of the roundtable.
Yeah.
Are there really guys like this who exist who are this beta, that this omega? This is why it bothers me when people say that it's a man's world. That is a load of garbage. Find me a woman who would be willing to bankroll a guy who makes no financial contribution to the household. But a woman can presumably find a setup like that.
Well, wait a minute. Linda's got that person. You know that person, don't you, Linda?
I do.
Yeah.
I actually do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want his name. But let's say she did, the woman in the Montreal wife, did discover a doormat who's giving her what's effectively a $40,000 annual allowance with no strings attached. And his idea of confronting her on it is to send an email to moneyologist. She can then be brazen enough to say, oh, and while you're at it, give me half the car and half the house. Michael lives one state over from me, zero states over from Linda. I am tempted to drive there and slap him myself. I would castrate him too, but apparently that's already been taken care of.
I wish Greg would speak his mind.
give me a few more shows.
What did you think about this, Joe?
I thought you can't go into a relationship assuming things. I think, you know, that was, I don't know, before I was married, I dated quite a few people. And I just, if the relationship started getting serious at all, you just couldn't assume that people felt something or that they were going to do something. You have to, you know, and even today being married, I just don't assume that Cheryl's thinking something or whatever. Whenever we do that, you know, it ends up causing problems. So that was it seems like he's assuming a lot. And I'm with Greg. Why do you write a letter to the moneyologist instead of talk to her? Of course, if the marriage is that estranged, which is what Paul is talking about, you know, then talking to somebody who's not involved about how do I approach my spouse, that's some serious problem.
Well, they obviously have a hard time saying no.
Right.
And that's an issue. But it won't stop. It'll just keep going. So at some point, you have to put your foot down and learn to say no.
And I found that also from people that manage people. Like, it seems like when we work in an office or work with other people, or we have a relationship in business, we think that that relationship that's not good is just going to get better. And I remember a great story with the CEO of 1-800-Flowers talking to Jack Welch from GE at a party and telling him there was a vice president. He really needed to let go, but he didn't know how to approach him. And Jack Welch just said, I don't know how you approach him either. You just got to do it now, because has the problem gotten any better in the last 6 weeks that you've been procrastinating? It just never does. You know, mm-hmm. Those difficult conversations have to happen.
Yeah. And people that have money issues, if they don't have anyone stopping them or saying no, those money issues are not going to change. So her $10,000 that she went through and didn't even know where it went, there's just more of that that's going to happen and happen and happen and happen. So you got to do something.
Greg, is part of the problem that she's originally from Canada?
Yeah, it's funny you mention this. First of all, this guy can't even articulate his feelings. He says, I feel like I'm being taken advantage of. You think? I'm not sure how to tell her in a nice way. This is the equivalent of using the verb consider. I have to contrast this, though, with who I think the role model is in the opposite direction. And anybody who watches the show Total Divas on E! Will understand this. WWE superstar John Cena has the exact opposite frame of mind from this guy. I have to say this because I think it's absolutely brilliant. Now, John Cena makes $5 million a year, but got divorced from his high school sweetheart a few years ago, ends up shacking up with another pro wrestler, the lovely Nikki Bella, and here's the move that he does. A, he absolutely refuses to get married. He's done that for about 3 years now. I'm never going to get married. I'm never going to have kids. And then gets her to sign, and this is his live-in girlfriend, gets her to sign a renter's agreement, which basically states that if the relationship ends, she's out on her ass in 24 hours and has no claim to any of his assets, including his property. John Cena needs to write a letter to this guy. This needs to be his 501st make-a-wish wish.
And that's an interesting point you bring up, though, the value of a prenup. Paula, what do you think about the value of a prenup in a relationship? Is it just for the John Cenas with $5 million, or should this guy have had one in his relationship?
You know, I'm reminded of a quote from Chris Rock where he says, if you've got $5 million and you lose half, you'll still be okay. But if you've got $30,000 and you lose half, you might have to kill someone.
So you're saying the prenup's more important when you have 30 grand.
Yeah, I'm saying that prenups are not just for quote-unquote rich people. They're arguably even more important, or at least equally important, for people for whom every dollar matters.
Yeah. Linda, do you agree?
I'm not sure that I agree, but I do think in this case he had significantly more assets, and therefore it is definitely worth protecting. But if you're in a community property state and she doesn't contribute into that asset or in any major way, then he should be fine keeping it separate. But I think in his case, he could have benefited from a prenup. But then again, she probably wouldn't have signed, right?
Yeah, no, good point. Where do you disagree?
I'm not sure that a prenup is necessary if you don't have a lot of assets.
Okay. Because the fact that you're going to grow them together?
Well, the fact that I think it really comes in handy or is really important when one person has significantly more assets than the other. If both don't have many assets, then I don't think it's as important as it is when one is the major contributor and the other isn't really contributing financially.
It's funny, in Quentin Fottrell's answer to Michael, I'm just going to leave it here because I thought this was funny. He said, and this goes right along with what all of you are saying, this is a partnership, not an episode of The Real Housewives.
Hey, don't put down The Real Housewives. That's my favorite trash.
It's on your favorite network, right? You watch all of those. That's funny. Well, let's see what's going on where each of you live. Greg, welcome back. And what's happening over at Investopedia?
I'm on hiatus right now. I'm still decompressing from Liechtenstein.
That's right. And that takes a long time, so we can't rush that process. But glad you're back. Paula, what's going on at Afford Anything?
At affordanything.com, I have published a monster blog post about a renovation. So if you are interested in learning more about home renovation, check that out. And at the Afford Anything podcast, I have some amazing guests. Cal Newport, Gene Chatsky, J.D. Roth is coming back on the show.
Woohoo!
So just some awesome people. Gretchen Rubin, Laura Vanderkam. So yeah. Tune in to hear from lots of smart people.
Absolutely. And that's wherever podcasts are sold.
Exactly. You can find it in your local Target.
That's right. Linda P. Jones, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
It's always so fun having you hang out with us. So what's going on at Be Wealthy and Smart, either the podcast or at just Be Wealthy and Smart?
Well, the Be Wealthy and Smart podcast, I have an interview with Richard C. Wilson, who works with billionaires. So we're actually going to talk about what is it like to invest like a billionaire and how are they different? It's really interesting.
Awesome. They're different because as a B. That'd be a short interview, wouldn't it?
That would be.
Yeah, that's great. We'll have a link to Be Wealthy and Smart in our show notes, everybody, at stackingbenjamins.com. All right, guys. Thanks for playing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, that's going to put a wrapper on this pre-holiday week. How great a week was that, huh? Dr. Roshana Novellis on Monday, the Wealthy Yogi. Just a fantastic interview with her on Monday. Wednesday, Matt Rodak from Fund That Flip. How wild is it that these crowdfunding platforms are coming around? And it's so exciting. But like Matt said, it's also so dangerous. You can really get in a world of hurt if you don't do things correctly. So big thanks to Matt Rodak for coming down to the basement. Also, thanks to Dr. Roshana Novellis. Good stuff. Hey, but the big thing today I wanted to tell you is that we play a game on these Friday episodes. What kind of game, you say? Well, let me tell you, this game is brand new today. So listen to the beginning of the show. Look at the words in the show description. That's generally where you'll find stuff for the game. There's two parts to the game. Number one, on this particular game, just like many of the older ones that we played, not the last game we played, but many of the older ones, you have to, number one, figure out what game we're playing. And then number two, you have to solve the puzzle. So I can't tell you what game we're playing, but I gave you the hints to make it there. And certainly from today, you're not going to figure it out. But if you decode today, that's going to be step one to decoding the entire puzzle. So can't tell you what it is. Richie and I were talking about this earlier today. Richie Rutter-Reese, our producer. This one's hard, but it's fun. This is actually a really cool game and came to us from a listener. I'm not even going to tell you what listener it is, so that listener doesn't know that it's his or her game. All right, let me tell you what's going on next week. Monday is a special day in the United States, Labor Day. It's a special day for everybody else. It's called Monday if you're not in the United States. But because it's a holiday, no guest on Monday. It's our top five episode. OG and I come back here to the basement and we'll have a very special top five money moves to make right now. So if you've got the day off on Monday, have a little time to make some money moves, we're going to tell you which ones to do. So you want to listen to that early on Monday. On Wednesday, our friend Lauren Groupman, she made some big mistakes with her money early on. And she's going to talk about, you know, they talk about you have to spend money to make money. And she believed that. And so she got herself into a world of hurt with debt. She's going to tell us a story. She's going to tell us how she climbed out of it. Very exciting. And she's launching her book here in a couple weeks, The Recovering Spender. So that's going to be a fun Wednesday. And then next Friday back here for another roundtable episode. Also, over on the Green Room, next Tuesday is going to be a very special episode because we're going to have an announcement on Monday's show here that might be surprising for a lot of you. So that's another reason to listen to Monday's show. But also, Tuesday, we will go into depth about what we're going to talk about on Monday's show. How's that for cryptic, huh? Just a cryptic way to start the week. I'll tell you what, enjoy your weekend. And then Monday, Labor Day, come back here and it will all be explained. All right, that's it. Thanks to all of our guests this week. Thanks to Linda P. Jones from Be Wealthy and Smart. Big thanks to Chris Costello from Bloom. Had a great, great week. Have a great holiday weekend, or just have a great weekend if you're outside the United States. Go Stacks and Benjamins. Bye-bye.
This show is the property of SB Podcast, LLC. The show is created by Josal Sehi, produced by Richie Rutter-Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Special thanks to Linda P. Jones from Be Wealthy and Smart. Find out more at bewealthyandsmart.com or at our show notes on stackingbenjamins.com. Greg McFarlane appears courtesy of Control Your Cash. Paula Pant appears courtesy of affordanything.com. Thanks to Chris Costello from Bloom for stopping by. Find out more about Bloom, that's Bloom with three O's, at bloom.com. And special thanks to Joe's mom, who said I get to try out her special Labor Day margarita. Looks like old Doug got the final word in on this one. Now here's a question. Who the heck's Margarita? She good looking? I don't care. I love me some Latin salsa.
What do you suppose they call that? A novelty act?
I don't know, but it wasn't too bad.
Well, that's a novelty. Hey!